Much like drinking white wine with your lunch, which you do in Italy and feel no effects thereafter, much like the quality and like lovely nature of coffee brewed in a mocha pot, but only in Italy, you have managed to deep fry chicken in a ceramic vessel mm-hmm. on a stovetop over direct heat, mm-hmm. again, with no ill effects.
None.
You pull a circus stunt like that in America, you will burn your house down, guaranteed. Hey there, listeners, future callers, and cooking enthusiasts. Welcome to Dinner SOS, the show where we help you save dinner or whatever you're cooking. I'm Chris Morocco, food director of Bon Appetit and Epicurious. Our caller this week is Gabe. She and her husband are from Australia, but they currently live in a city called Treviso in northern Italy.
It is a great place, Treviso. It's got a couple of culinary claims to fame. It's the birthplace of tiramisu. It's also where radicchio is grown.
Yeah.
And it's also on the at the foothills of Val d'Abbiadene, which is the region where Prosecco grapes are grown.
Yeah.
So, yeah, great food and wine traditions, which is one of the reasons that we came here, Chris.
Oh, that sounds great. What made you want to call in today? If you just want to talk about, like, Tardivo radicchio, we can do that too. Trust me.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, they even make radicchio ice cream here. They've found every manifestation of radicchio under the sun.
But Gabe didn't call in just to brag about her radicchio bounty. See, Gabe and her husband have made friends with an American couple also living in Treviso.
It's been a great cultural exchange. We even got to participate in our first Thanksgiving meal that they hosted at the end of last year, and that was bewildering, that event. You're eating something called stuffing, but it doesn't seem to be stuffed into the cavity of anything. It's just in a big tray.
Oh, sure.
And you back it up with a dessert made of a vegetable, like pumpkin pie.
Don't get me started on that.
So we had the Americans over for dinner. We thought we'd give them a touch of the old USA by making them hamburgers, and we screwed it up because we put beetroot or beets on our burgers in Australia, and they're like, beets on a burger, that's so interesting. And so obviously...
Good accent, I have to say. 10 out of 10.
Thanks. So that's where your team comes in. I need some help in assembling a dinner that sort of typifies true American cuisine. And I want to pay homage to your home country, but what the hell is that? And particularly given that this couple are sort of bi-coastal, you know, what typifies an American meal?
Oh, God. Yeah. I mean, that's a great question. If I could just sort of like rewind ever so slightly, when you say you put beetroot in your burgers, and you mean not just as a personal practice, but as a national pastime.
Oh, yeah. So it's not in the patty itself, but it's a roasted beetroot slice that would go on our burger. And, I mean, this could really make you cringe, but there are a lot of people out there that will also put a ring of pineapple on it as well. I'm sorry. Are you vomiting?
No. Hold on. I'm taking notes and beetroot slice.
Yes.
And that's part of like a standard set on a burger.
Oh, yeah. Correct. A burger with a lot.
Just right there.
It's
a burger
there.
With the lot.
Yeah, alongside the bacon, alongside the fried egg. And we don't have ketchup. We have tomato sauce, but similar type of thing. So they were staring at the plate going, oh, beets, that's so interesting. So, yeah, clearly an epic fail on our part.
I mean, but was it an epic fail? Was it a sort of like a culinary lost in translation born of the fact that like this was a sort of unfamiliar presentation of a familiar dish? So I've been in food for a while. And one of the things that always was incredibly inspiring to me was actually Australian food media.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically Donna Hay.
Ah, yeah, she's great.
And one of the things that I appreciated about Donna Hay, the person and the magazine, was that there was a very easy, breezy sort of incorporation of all kinds of cooking influences in her food, mm-hmm. right? Like, not uncommon to see a sriracha and something glazed short rib, right? You would see a lot of Asian influences. you'd see a lot of global influences.
Yeah, we're a multicultural society and the food really reflects that.
And perhaps, listen, I've never been to Australia, so just take everything I say with a pinch of salt. But like, you know, America still has like a reasonable amount of regional, you know, differences in its cuisine. But I think the question of what is American cuisine is very much trying to hit a moving target, you know, to try to really arrive at some kind of coherent definition because it encompasses so many different traditions. I'm dancing around what I wanted to say to you, which was how important is it to you to present American cuisine to these folks versus like showcasing the polyglot nature of Australian cuisine, you know, which in a certain way, at least like in spaces like food media, is responding to a lot of the same kind of global currents of influence. Yeah. But then again, part of me is like, listen, Gabe wants a burger. We're going to do a smash burger. We're going to teach Gabe how to do like a crispy double stack patty. We're going to do like a high-end version of a friggin' Big Mac and blow the hair right off her friends' heads.
I suppose I was thinking beyond the burger, like, what is it? I think there was a survey at some stage in Australia to name what our national dish was, and it was fairly overwhelming that a roasted lamb leg was our national dish.
Mm.
And I wondered what is the American equivalent of that? Is it a hamburger or is it pizza? What are people in your office likely to say is the essence of American cuisine?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. And I feel like it's probably going to take some research and sort of like if there were something that we could say is like uniquely American, that's not simply borrowed, but that is uniquely American, what would that be? And does it contain ingredients that Gabe can get in Treviso?
Yeah, there's the curveball.
I mean, whatever we come up with is probably going to be woefully inadequate to address the full breadth of your question. But ultimately, you know, at the end of the day, like, it's going to be dinner and you're going to eat it and it's probably going to be pretty good, you know? So.
Yeah, well, we're bang up for it. You throw what you can at us from a menu point of view and we'll do our best to source ingredients.
Amazing.
And if I could also ask you to consider maybe if you had a sommelier like Andre Mack, who might be able to provide us with an Italian wine pairing just to help us extend our bandwidth of knowledge of Italian wines, that would really help both the Americans and the Australian contingent here.
That's a really interesting thought. You've planted a seed, yeah.
I think generally when you travel to another country, we kind of default to like a comfort zone. And so I'm like, you know, it's like, hey, I grew up in Texas. Hamburguesa, I know what that is.
Yeah.
And then you get it and there's no bun and there's like peas and like pea shoots. You know what
exactly,
I mean? And
so
it's like when you travel to another place, you kind of get what American food is, right? It's like,
yeah,
no, this looks familiar, but like, what's this roasted beet underneath here?
Yeah.
Like totally would throw me off.
Why get a sommelier like Andre Mack to figure out a wine plan for Gabe when you can just get Andre Mack? In addition to being a sommelier and the face of Bon Appetit's drink-focused video series, World of Wine, Andre has worked in some iconic American restaurants on both coasts. And in 2019, he opened And Sons, which is a ham bar. Yes, you heard that right. It's a bar whose menu featured a wide array of American cured hams. So while I had him on the line to talk wine pairings, I also wanted to pick Andre's brain about the question behind Gabe's SOS. What the heck is American food anyway? Is it foolish to even attempt to codify this?
No, I don't think it's foolish to attempt. I think it's just the everyday things, like fried chicken is an American food. Macaroni and cheese is a staple American comfort food, right? If you think of Tex-Mex, you know, I grew up in San Antonio, Texas. So thinking of things like fajitas, Cajun cuisine. So, you know, food from Louisiana. Also think here, living on the East Coast, New England seafood.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So you think of clam chowder, lobster rolls, fried clams, like, you know, barbecue. It varies from different regional barbecue, but to me, those are very American. Apple pie. Right? Like when we think of that and something like a hamburger, like that is considered to be something very iconic to American regional food that you could be blindfolded and taste and know where it's from.
Yeah.
It's that distinct.
Well, okay, if you were Gabe, what would your dream menu be? If you had to choose from all the different foods we've touched on, if it was you in the driver's seat, where would you go?
I would probably go fried chicken.
Okay.
I'm just thinking of being there. Like, it might be hard to find some of the ingredients to, like, to come up with Tex-Mex or, you know, like something that's as regional as like getting a lobster roll. Like, I think, like, you know, like, what did someone say? They said, like, you know, tell me somebody who doesn't like chicken, right? You know, that's a gift from God, right? Like, it's a bird that doesn't fly, right? You know what I mean? But like, for me, it's like, oh, of course, there's chickens there. There's, you know, you can find some with the skin on, like there's oil there, right? You know what I mean?
Seasoning,
flour, like however you want to do your thing. Yeah. And so that seems like the easiest thing.
Yeah, totally. I'm curious, like, okay, if you're in the Veneto, right? Do you feel like there's like a wine experience that she would have like locally available to her that would kind of
absolutely
integrate well?
Yeah. I mean, I think if we're looking at Southern cuisine, you know, maybe looking at something like Primitivo or something like that, just kind of those bold flavors. If I think about Tex-Mex, Alianico, I think is kind of a great fit there. Firm tannins, but like not crazy on the alcohol and not something that's very rich per se. And so you want less alcoholic wines with spicier dishes, just, you know, that way it doesn't enhance the alcohol. American food being rich and sweet, you want to use some wines that are a little bit higher in acid.
Yeah.
So Barbera, I think, is great. To me, it's, you know, I always feel like that's, you know, your everyday drinking wine there. Really, you know, bright acidity, red fruit flavors, just like really great. You know, you mentioned Prosecco. Like,
yeah.
I think sparkling wine and fried chicken go great together. And I think that's a kind of easy go-to. If you wanted to do something without bubbles, maybe Vermentino. So just, you know, citrusy, white, acid, just kind of really balances the saltiness that you would get in fried chicken.
Andre's fried chicken suggestion really set my wheels in motion, but I couldn't shake the idea of giving Gabe a burger without beetroot. After the break, Bon Appetit and Epicurious's resident Aussie, Adam Musa, tells me whether that's a dream worth pursuing. Here at Dinner SOS, we love tackling your kitchen issues. But what if I told you there's a way to rescue dinner before it turns into an emergency? With expert insights from the test kitchen, cooking and entertaining tips, and a treasury of over 50,000 recipes, Bon Appetit and Epicurious are your lifelines to rescue any meal. And right now, our listeners can get 20% off an annual digital subscription, including access to the user-friendly Epicurious app. Just use code SOS20 at bonappetit.com. That's SOS20 for a 20% discount on an annual digital subscription to Bon Appetit and Epicurious. Happy cooking. And don't worry, I'll still be here if your dinner plan self-destructs. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. I think when we're stressed, it makes it harder for us to even think about engaging in relationship building and friendship building. So when I think about, you know, myself, I think, oh, having a little bit more of a balanced mind, having a little bit more of a calm mind is going to make me that much more likely to open myself up to others. It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. What is the right amount of socializing for you? And how do you recharge? Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/dinnersos today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/dinnersos. Welcome back to Dinner SOS. In order to help Gabe through this exercise in dinner party diplomacy, I needed to call upon someone who's no stranger to scouring the grocery store for imported goods.
I think I was trying to find like marshmallow fluff at one point in Australia. God. Just like these American ingredients that we take for granted here that are everywhere, and then they're so exotic when you get out of the country.
Adam Musa runs social video here at Bon Appetit and Epicurious. And since he's Australian himself, living in America, I thought he'd be the perfect person to help Gabe bridge that gap. But before we could even get to Gabe, I wanted Adam to answer for this Aussie beetroot burger situation.
That's what we do. It's messed up and it's excellent and it's just...
Why the beetroot?
I don't know, but I find it delicious and I find myself craving it all the time. But it's like, it's a very specific, like, you don't want the burger to be fancy, which I know is a, like, that's an impulse we share with America. Like, a lot of Americans, like, you want a smash burger, you want, like, the greasy diner type of thing. And in Australia, when we try and gussy up our burgers, it always ends up being like less than the sum of its parts.
I mean, it could be, and I don't know, you know, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. Like, it could be that, like, Gabe could try to make more of like an American style burger. Mm. Could be an interesting thing for her to do, you know? Yeah. Think of a smash burger in America, even at Shake Shack. It's like the burger is the crispiest thing, has the thing with the most texture in there. Yeah. Whereas, like, the burger that she described, the pineapple and the fibrousness and the beetroot and the solidity of like that vegetable that's like really resists any kind of falling apart, and then this patty that is more like meatloaf like in texture and just kind of evanesces, you know, against that backdrop, an egg. I mean, yeah, wild.
I will say though, when we talk about smash burgers, and I think Americans tend to forget about this, the potato roll is a huge point of difficulty because it's, I guess I'm not sure about Italy, but I would very much doubt that potato rolls are readily available there. I went to a very fancy, like, fish butchery place in Sydney, had this wall of, like, beautiful imported ingredients, and alongside all these fancy shit is potato rolls because they're imported. And I was laughing my head off because I cannot believe this thing, which is, we take for granted here because they're so good. Oh my God. But there it was sitting alongside like a $30 soy sauce, and they were stale because, you know, they have to be shipped over.
So maybe the iconic American style smash burger can't be achieved in Treviso. But luckily, I had Andre's suggestions in my back pocket. And even more luckily, when we got Gabe back on the line, she already felt at home.
Am I hearing a slight Australian accent in there?
It's only slight now? Wow, okay. I mean, people always tell me that I have a busted accent, but I guess maybe by the end of this call, with the two of us bouncing off of each other, maybe it'll intensify a bit.
Oh, Gabe, welcome back. How have you been?
Hey, really good. Living the dream. Thank you. All good here.
Love that. I am joined in the studio by Adam Musa, who is like a foodie's foodie foodie. He's like three levels deep into like foodie-ism. So anyway, Adam, I want to kick this over to you because you were off and running. I mean, you were just like in Sydney just weeks ago.
The thing I was telling Chris was that as Australians, and this is like a quintessential, this is a hallmark of being Australian, but we just take everything good we have for granted and kind of look overseas for something to really kind of fetishize, I guess. Circa 2010 or so in Sydney, where I'm from, there was a massive like American diner food thing. It was super in vogue. Everyone wanted to make fried chicken and burgers and, you know, fried pickles and these big insane milkshakes and mac and cheese and fried mac and cheese bites and everything like that. So like Australians have their own conception of what American food is, and we treat it like it's this god tier thing because it's we see it on the movies. That's part of like what makes our culture. But at the same time, we ignore or take for granted everything that we have right under our noses, which is like this breadth of Asian cuisines, and we have incredible Malaysian food, and Thai food is ubiquitous in Australia in the same way that like Chinese food is ubiquitous in New York City. And I was telling Chris how it's extremely Italian, it's extremely Lebanese, it's extremely all of these different waves of immigrant cuisines that have just made Australia what it is.
Well, Adam, you're making me feel very homesick right now because you're absolutely right. I hanker for a banh mi, honestly, just for some cilantro at the moment, a kingdom for cilantro here at the moment. But the problem that we have here, well, it's not a problem. It's actually very sustainable, but you have to cook what's in season and what's available at the local market. And my husband and I have been just talking about the fact that the food here doesn't have the breadth and depth of variety that we're used to in our home countries. And so the idea that I came across was to have them over for a treat and treat them with something that would remind them of what it was like back in the USA, of something that isn't necessarily tiramisu on a plate, radicchio on a plate. What's going to make them have that wistful, yearning feeling for back home in a food context?
Well, Adam, do you want to start?
Yeah. I mean, I think our things are going to complement each other.
Yeah,
I think
this they're one all is, of a kind.
Is much less of a competition. And my mind immediately goes to mac and cheese, which I think as something that ingredients-wise you're probably going to be able to find because it's not so dependent on seasonal produce.
Yes. Yeah,
you hear that? Produce. I say produce now instead of produce.
You bloody traitor. okay.
It's not like we don't have mac and cheese in Australia, but it's, well, in every iteration I've encountered it, it's like kind of healthified or it's, you know.
Yeah, or they put cauliflower in it or some other sort of fancy schmancy. But, you know, I've never cooked mac and cheese. I've never cooked it.
Really?
Well, boy, do I have a recipe for you. BA's Best Mac and Cheese, which is a recipe by Dawn Perry.
Uh-huh.
And so the BA's Best label is, it's exactly what it sounds like. It's like the best iteration of that that we can offer. And I think with something with as many recipes and variations as mac and cheese, I was kind of skeptical that it could be that. This is this incredibly, the first word that's coming to mind is goopy, but that is a absolute positive in this instance. I think it has four cheeses in it, this recipe.
Yep. Parmesan, fontina, Gruyere, and sharp white cheddar.
Beautiful.
Or their equivalents, you know, that you might be able to locally source. It's, you know, you don't have to be dogmatic about the cheeses.
Yep.
You need something with a little funk and you need something with like a little bit of like sharpness and brightness. And
fantastic.
The parm, I mean, you will have no problem finding, obviously.
Absolutely. But I love the idea of some really unctuous cheeses going on in there as well.
It does a lot of things really well. Like, first of all, to Adam's point, it's a saucier mac and cheese. It's like bechamel base. And there is a good amount of sauce relative to how much pasta is in there. It's got 8 ounces of pasta, but it's got so much cheese and sauce going on. And I'm somebody who I get really like scared whenever I see a breadcrumb topping on something because my kids have trained me that like that is like the thing that'll make them not eat the thing, you know, like crispy thing on a gooey unctuous thing, like the, you know, like game over. But the breadcrumbs, my goodness, they really work. They're so powerful in here.
Is it a panko or is it a fresh breadcrumb?
Yeah, it's a panko topping and I think it just gets like fried with the butter, right? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's a banger. I mean, we could stop there, but, you know, here at Bon Appetit, wretched excess is barely enough. So what I was going to suggest, and this is partly because I thought Andre had a really good point about fried chicken as well, which is that fried chicken, you know, you won't struggle to find any of these ingredients, you know, and it's something that is really distinctly American. And I'm specifically thinking about a recipe. This one goes back to 2012. And this was kind of like a all hands on deck kind of team collaborative effort in development because we wanted to really gamify all the different elements that go into making a buttermilk brine fried chicken, including interrogating the idea of a buttermilk brine itself. Now, is buttermilk available in Italy? I don't know.
I haven't seen it, but I haven't looked at for it. But I don't think it would be very hard to replicate with a bit of acid and a bit of, you know,
maybe not
sour
crazy.
Cream or something. If I couldn't find it. Yeah, I don't think it's a crazy ask.
It's got a dry rub, you know, things like garlic powder, onion powder, cayenne, paprika. Okay, so it's like sitting in the dry rub and then it gets a buttermilk wash and then a simple mixture, you know, like mostly flour, a touch of cornstarch. And, you know, this is like a pretty, it's pretty easy. I mean, it would be just mainly a question of like what you would want to serve it with, you know, like probably quite a bit of radicchio. And I remember it being a great recipe. I think if part of why this recipe hasn't necessarily had the most stellar digital afterlife is like looking at this photo is like they just took like a sort of outtake from like chicken frying in oil. You can't see a damn thing. It's just like some like murky chicken with like bubbles around it.
There is no focal point to this thing.
Yeah,
you
I mean,
cannot
it's,
see.
It's,
is
it's,
it craggy? Is it?
Yeah.
You cannot see.
And if there's one thing I would go back and fault us for, I don't think we were thinking enough about the wonderful practice, as evidenced by Claire Saffitz's BA's Best Fried Chicken Sandwich, of putting some of the buttermilk wash into the dry flour dredge as a way of forcing some of those kind of craggy edges onto the chicken itself. So if you wanted to cross-check against this recipe, you know, which uses boneless, skinless chicken dies. That's another great recipe.
I'm loving this. Again, of all of the things I've ever done with chicken, I've never actually bothered to fry it. So I like the challenge of it. And I think with the mac and cheese, it sounds like a fantastic pairing. I would presume after all that cholesterol, I should be serving it with a very crisp, astringent salad to go with it.
Exactly. So much radicchio, so much vinegar. We're going to take another break. When we get back, we'll hear how Gabe's great big American dinner party went.
Tell me about your mama's kitchen.
This teeny tiny little room was where we did everything. We grew up there. We became teenagers, adults in that small space.
I'm Michelle Norris. The kitchen is usually the heartbeat of our homes. It's the place where we're nourished physically and spiritually. It's where the people we love most chased away life's furies with skillets and spatulas.
I love you. I really care about you. Those words don't come naturally. But what you can do is hand someone a corned beef sandwich that's the size of your head. And that means the same thing.
Every week, I'm serving up a new episode of this Audible original podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. They're available anywhere you listen.
Gabe, you there?
Hey, boys. How are you?
Hello.
Hi, welcome back. How's it going?
Happy, a little exhausted from our exercise in Australian-American diplomatic relations over here in Treviso, but
really?
It was well worth the effort.
Was it? Oh, wow. Effort, huh?
Yeah.
I'm curious what that means. I actually heard a rumor there's a little bit of reveal tape. Michelle, you want to roll that?
I'm going to try to make the deep-fried chicken and back that up with the macaroni cheese for, you know, a full-on fabulous hit of American fare. And I was a bit inspired by listening to Andre talk about apple pie, and short crust pastry frightens the crap out of me. So I think I should be brave and give that a go too, just to round out that full American experience. I've sourced some local wines as per Andre's suggestions, and I'm really looking forward to this experience.
Wow. Fried chicken, BA's best mac and cheese, and what did you do, the BA's best apple pie, or was it another one?
Sure did.
Did you?
No, that, the Claire Saffitz recipe.
I love that recipe, Adam. This is like a seriously baller apple pie. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but basically it's like you toss everything through and then reduce down that liquid. So you're able to use proportionately like a pretty massive amount of apples, but ultimately control the moisture. And that sort of like saucy matrix that you've reduced down then gets tossed through the apples and it kind of redistributes itself through the baking process.
Oh, this sounds exquisite. This is a double crust situation
yes.
we're talking here?
Okay. Classic, right down the middle double crust presentation.
But don't let him make it sound, Adam, as though it was effortless and easy to deliver.
Oh, no, I don't even attempt double crust, so I can't imagine that you took that on with everything else that you were handling. This is serious overachiever territory that we're in right now.
Well, it was a bloody two-day process. You sort of make the short crust one day and then you roll it out and deliver the pie the next. But I did do a dry run on the apple pie because Australians, as you know, Adam, are proud people and we don't want to make fools of ourselves in front of Americans.
What's that like? Americans would have just been like, well, we've never done it before, but hey, we've got folks coming over. Let's just do it that day. You know?
It's good to know that you view Americans like that, because I think Australians are not shy about saying that Americans would just come and make idiots of themselves in the first place.
Oh, yeah. Oh, 100%.
Not a chance over here, let me tell you. So I'm glad I did do a first pass, because the initial pie looked exactly like the BA's pie in the pictures in the magazine, but I did have soggy bottom syndrome the first time
Really?
Around.
Really?
It was my fault. When I saw the pie getting brown at around about the 1.5 hour mark, I presumed I could just bring it out of the oven then, where I should have left it for two. But on the second pass, I mitigated those problems by keeping it in the oven for the full 2 hours, and I placed the ceramic dish on a foil lined tray really low in the oven. So
yeah,
soggy bottom, no more, Chris.
Wow. Okay. Hold on. Michelle's going to send that one through. Adam, here's the pie. That pie looks stellar.
Oh, thank you.
This is a hulking brute of a pie. This is a brooding, menacing heavyweight in the
juggernaut
double
of juggernaut.
Pie. Yes. And I just, this is like a big old slab of heaven right here. And the color you achieved on it, the vents are adequate. You didn't try to get cute. You know, you opened up that top and you let that sucker breathe. And as a result, you've got really quite a wonderful, deep, burnished top crust on there.
Yeah, I was super proud of the end product and it tasted delicious. Also, and I think tough game for young players here, but I didn't realize on the first pass that you actually take this thing out of the oven and it's got to rest for 4 hours before you tuck into it. So I think the resting was really good though, because when we had leftovers the next day, we probably committed some heinous BA sin by putting the pie in the microwave to reheat, but the crust still held up.
You better before I heard that, but it's okay. I guess let's just go kind of work backwards. BA's best mac and cheese. What were your thoughts?
Oh, this did not disappoint. I defy you to look at the photographs that we've sent through and compare them to the Dawn Perry one in the magazine. I am so proud of its parmesan panko crunchy crust.
Adam is looking at the photos of your mac and cheese. I'm looking at the photos of your mac and cheese. The consistency of that sauce and the morning treviso light beaming off of that sauce. Wow, the shine.
Oh, I was that bloody proud of that sauce. I used a sharp, tasty cheese as well as the fontina. And then for the third cheese, I thought I'd whack in a local cheese, which is bloody gorgeous.
What is it?
From a local
producer.
It's called Latteria Sant'Andrea. It's just a formaggio fresco.
Oh, okay.
A fresh cheese that they use for their bechamel here.
Ooh.
And so it had the right sort of stretchy ropiness to it, but so unctuous. And it was delicious.
It seems great. It's got lovely golden color. And wow, the pasta is wearing that cheese sauce like a slinky little black dress on each little elbow, cavatappi. I don't even know what shape that is.
Yeah, what's the shape of this pasta?
Yeah.
Cavatappi. And
cavatappi.
It was a brilliant choice because of its sort of spirally nature. It grabbed onto the breadcrumbs and the cheese sauce and it all came on the fork together into the mouth.
Yeah, the gloss on this is just driving
it's
me crazy.
Wild.
I feel like need to make this again immediately.
You've really captured... what I love is like honestly being able to have like the images and just the way that you've captured it like really flatters the work that you put into these dishes. So hats off to you.
Thank you so much.
Can we talk chicken?
Oh my gosh. Leo, my husband, whose life is pretty much in service to me as a sous chef, his life is a nightmare that starts at the crack of dawn. He boned the chicken for me because we could only get bone chicken thighs, and he seasoned it on the wire rack in the fridge the day before, which was fine unless you actually looked in there. It looked like an autopsy in your fridge splayed out. But we did the buttermilk and flour dredge. I was so interested in this because I always presumed American fried chicken was made with breadcrumbs like a panko. But no, it's a dusting of flour and all those fantastic seasonings. So you get these craggy, shaggy bits, which were terrific.
That assumption about the breading, I'm like memory unlocked here. Is that how we do schnitzel in Australia? Or like, does this ring a bell for you?
Yeah, yeah. When we do it, we call them, obviously we call them chicken schnitties. But yeah, a schnitty in Australia will definitely have breadcrumbs and preferably panko. So this was a surprise to us. And we were really surprised at how crunchy the sort of carapace was on the outside of the chicken. But inside it was so tender from the buttermilk and, you know, that seasoning, salting and sugar. Sugar in that seasoning the night before was crazy.
Part of what makes it, I think, like distinctly American, though, you know, you're amping up every element of flavor, and sweetness is ultimately part of what balances something that's really savory, you know, that's got like a pretty high quotient of salt, but then also some spice and a little touch of heat to it as well. It just makes it more of like just a very well-rounded set of flavors as opposed to something that presents as like monolithically kind of like salty, savory. And we're not even done talking yet because I want to know, what did your friends think?
Well, this was fantastic. Our American neighbors, David and Lisa, when they arrived, they knew that we were going to treat them with some food from their mother country, which had them guessing like what we might serve them. And they'd speculated that we might serve them hot dogs or meatloaf or hamburger and fries or barbecue, and then maybe back it up with some brownies. But they were super excited to try what we'd made. And their definite hands-down favourite was the mac and cheese. I think not only is it redolent with memories for them of being back home, it can transport them back to childhood or these student days when all you're doing is getting out that ubiquitous box of mac and cheese and adding water or whatever the hell you do with a boxed mac and cheese. But it did inspire some fabulous conversation and lots of nostalgia.
Oh, that's great. And tell me more about the wines you drank.
Sure. So as per Andre's suggestions, we sourced a Vermentino white wine and we served it with the mac and cheese and the fried chicken because it was bright and fresh, not too cloying and sweet. Heaven on a stick and new for us. So we'll definitely reach for that on the wine shelves in the future. And then we served the Prosecco from a local winery called Col Veteraz here in the Treviso region. We served that with the apple pie because it was super fresh and acidic, which sort of cut through all that buttery pastry and caramelly sweet apple filling. So the Prosecco was a perfect way, Chris, to round out the fun with a toast at the end of the meal and the end of this adventure, really.
Oh, how fun to do a Prosecco at the conclusion of a meal. Oh, wonderful. I'm stunned. Adam, this thoughts? Adam, like, deals in, like, food photos professionally, and I feel like even he's, like, kind of stunned.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting to get this level of, like, almost reminiscent of, like, gourmet photography.
Yes. But
it's just so beautifully done. You've shot these gorgeously. They look tremendous.
Gabe, wow. We should be calling you. I mean, like, I don't even know what's happening here anymore. So where do we go from here? Like, are your American friends now going to have you over and now try to, like, one-up you with meat pies and lamingtons and, sorry, Adam.
No, that's...
I'm, like, trying.
No, that's very much it. I mean, but again, like, we talked about this a bit last week. You could go in basically any direction you wanted to
be fine.
And just say it was Australian because it really is.
Yeah.
Maybe like flip it. They can make you a schnitty and a pavlova.
Yeah.
If you have a dinner emergency on your hands, write to us at dinnersos@bonappetit.com or leave us a voice message at 212-286-SOS1. That's 212-286-7071. We'd love to feature your question on the show. You can find the recipes mentioned on today's episode: BA's best apple pie, BA's best mac and cheese, BA's best fried chicken sandwich, and the skillet fried chicken on the Epicurious app brought to you by Condé Nast. Just search Epicurious in the App Store and download today. If you enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating and review on your podcast app of choice and hit the follow button so you never miss an episode. Thanks for listening to Dinner SOS. I'm your host, Chris Morocco. My co-host this week is Adam Musa. Special thanks to Andre Mack for joining us this episode. Our producer is Michelle O'Brien. Peyton Hayes is our associate producer. Cameron Foose is our assistant producer. Jake Loomis is our studio engineer. Amar Lal mixed this episode. Chris Bannon is Condé Nast head of global audio. Next week, Michelle Norris, former co-host of NPR's All Things Considered and current host of the podcast, Your Mama's Kitchen, joined me to answer some listener questions and share an SOS of her own.
I probably was distracted. I, you know, maybe was on, I don't know what I was doing, on the phone or something like that. I burnt the greens.
Liquid gone, just like just singed the bottom, in the bottom of it,
just burnt.
Post-COVID, started reevaluating where we were in our lives, my husband Leo and I, and just thought, hang it, life's too short. Let's get the hell out of the rat race and go and enjoy it before, you know, we get run over by a bus or something worse. So figured we'd spend some time over here for a couple of years.
Wow. Okay. I mean, I feel like I'm constantly reevaluating my life and then ultimately just sort of staying exactly kind of where I am, just waiting for that bus.
Seize the day, Chris. Carpe diem.
Hello, parents, homeschoolers, and teachers. Trusty narrator here from the Who Smarted podcast. Our 15-minute episodes are perfect for car rides, bedtime, break time, class time, or any time. We make learning science and history fun and funny for 7 to 11-year-olds with new episodes every week. Look for Who Smarted on any podcast platform or at whosmarted.com. And teachers get a free subscription to our ad-free version by clicking Educators at whosmarted.com.